Hello and welcome to Korean Context, a behind-the-scenes conversation with the scholars, artists, and opinion makers who bridge our two worlds. This podcast was brought to you by the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C. I'm Martha Legutsky, and I'll be your host today. Today we'll be talking about OLS, that's for Opinion Leaders Seminar, an annual gathering of some of the world's foremost policymakers and scholars on the U.S.-South Korean alliance to discuss the current top issues on the bilateral agenda. Experts hail from Korea to join their American counterparts in Washington, D.C. to exchange ideas, and possibly butt heads, on the major questions of the day. This year marked OLS's 10th year running and took place from July 26th to the 28th. It was touted by some of its participants to be the most successful to date. Here's one of the co-chairs of the event, Alan Romberg, with a few words about his experiences with OLS.
I've participated in a number. I can't really remember exactly how many of these I have, but I think that what is important about the series is that KEI and KIEF have brought together people, sometimes a varying group of people, perhaps more on the Korean side than on the American side, to address what are really sort of the key issues of the day. They're enduring issues on the one hand, about the alliance, about North Korea, about economic relations, but things change. And so, to some extent, the players at these, or the participants at these seminars have also changed. But what they have not changed is the focus on the key issues and the seriousness, frankly, with which people come here.
Mr. Romberg is the director of the East Asia Program at the Henry L. Stimson Center in D.C. In the past, he served as principal deputy director of the State Department's policy planning staff and was director of the Washington Office of the U.S. Permanent Representative to the United Nations. He was also special assistant to the Secretary of the Navy.
You mentioned that the flavor of the discussion can change depending on who's actually present from year to year. What would you say about this group?
This group from Korea was pretty diverse in its views. There were people, as I said in my wrap-up remarks at the conference, everybody agreed, I think, on the importance of the US-ROK alliance, for example. But there were quite different views about some aspects of the alliance on the question of even whether it was a good idea that operational control of Korean forces, that transition be delayed, as it now has been, for 3.5 years.
Just to butt in here, Mr. Romberg is talking about OPCON transfer, or the U.S. to ROK transfer of military operational control in South Korea. At present, there are 28,500 American troops stationed throughout South Korea, primarily in Seoul, Osan, and up by the 38th parallel, along which resides the demilitarized zone dividing north from south. At the recent G20 summit in Toronto in June, Presidents Obama and Lee announced that OPCON transfer, which had been scheduled to take place by April 2012, would be delayed until December 2015.
So these issues are not really divided between Koreans on the one hand and Americans on the other. There is a range of views on both sides. But I think on the Korean side, there was perhaps a greater diversity of view than has been the case in at least some of the previous OLS meetings.
You mentioned in your concluding remarks that on one hand, the U.S. needs to be careful not to escalate the North Korean situation in light of an impending succession. But on the other hand, the U.S. needs to demonstrate that it will be responsive to escalation by the North Korean side. Those seem to be at odds with one another in light of the recent Chonan incident and all of the aftermath of that. How would you say that we could dance this fine line successfully?
My flip answer to that would be very carefully. But I would also say this is not just a U.S. responsibility. This is a U.S.-ROK responsibility. And indeed, beyond the alliance, it also involves the others involved with Korea. It involves China, which is providing some difficulties, frankly, at this very moment. It involves Japan. It involves Russia. But as far as the alliance is concerned, I think that what is perhaps hard to get across to the North Koreans, but is, I think, a basic truth, is that we don't pose a threat to North Korea. We're not interested in getting into a confrontation with North Korea. The notion of bringing North Korea out into a responsible and constructive relationship with everybody else is a very sincere goal, not just because we're great people and we want to do well for the North Korean people, though I think, in fact, people would hope they would do better. but because it's in our interest to make sure that North Korea is a contributor to a peaceful and prosperous region. So that the making sure they understand that provocation and aggression is going to be responded to is really a deterrent approach. It may have to involve something more than that if the North does more things which are in fact aggressive and provocative. But that's not the hope. The hope is to send a message. The exercises that have just been completed in the East Sea and that will then be continued with further aspects of exercises around the peninsula are all designed to send that message to Korea. Don't mistake our will on this. But we do not have aggressive intention toward you. On the other hand, I think that everybody hopes that at some point in the not horribly distant future, we will be able to get back to some kind of process that leads toward denuclearization. This is a very serious issue. It's a serious issue locally. It's a serious issue globally. Non-proliferation efforts are certainly harmed by the fact that North Korea has a nuclear weapons program. And so it's really quite important to get to that issue. How to convince North Korea in the course of that, that they can in fact safely give up their nuclear weapons and not harm, but in fact bolster their own security, is going to be something everybody has to focus on. But it also requires that North Korea seriously be willing and open to a kind of relationship, a new kind of relationship with the U.S., with the ROK, and with others that will allow us to provide that kind of assurance to them in a non-nuclear status.
I'm going to have to interrupt here again. During that last response, Mr. Romberg referred to military exercises taking place in the East Sea. For those of our listeners who aren't completely certain of what he's talking about, here's a quick recap of recent events to get you up to speed. The sinking of a South Korean Navy ship called the Chunan in late March of this year caused international commotion, especially after a multi-nation investigative team led by South Korea concluded that the Chunan was sunk by a North Korean torpedo. North Korea patently denied having played a role in the sinking, China didn't accept the results of the investigation at all, and when the UN Security Council later released a statement on the attack, it stopped short of naming the perpetrator. South Korea and the United States followed with their own multifaceted response to the Chunan attack, which included sanctions by both countries on North Korea, as well as the conduction of military exercises in the East Sea, about which North Korea was not at all pleased. It's those joint US-ROK naval exercises that Mr. Romberg references in his comments.
You mentioned that the recent exercises in the East Sea are meant as deterrents, but not aggressive measures, and this is the message we're trying to send to North Korea. But North Korea recently said that if these exercises proceeded, they would respond with a nuclear response or a physical response of some sort. What is the possibility that they're misinterpreting what is intended to be non-aggressive as aggression?
I'm not sure they misinterpreted it as aggression, although I can't put myself totally into their chair, obviously. But a lot of it depends on how one looks at the Chunan incident. And it's very clear to me, anyway, from the international investigation report that the Chunan was sunk by a torpedo. The evidence is pretty conclusive that it was a North Korean torpedo. And in any case, who else would have done this? So they may want to deny that. They may want to look at or describe anyway these exercises as threatening North Korea. But this is not a new pattern of North Korean behavior. In the past, they've taken anything which would seem to be challenging to their ability to act provocatively and said, oh, that's a threat to us. And so I think we need to hope that the North Korean government will in fact, look seriously at these issues, try to understand American and ROK perspectives more clearly. But I have to say this, in the past when they have threatened to do something such as a nuclear response, they have generally followed through. And so, in my mind, the most logical from their point of view would be another nuclear test. Now, I don't think that contributes to North Korean security. And I don't think it contributes to the willingness of everybody else to contribute positively to somehow bringing North Korea into a constructive relationship which will benefit North Korea. But I'm just saying that in the past when they have raised these kinds of threats, if you will, they have, in fact, tended to follow through. Sometimes, seemingly, I think pretty conclusively, because they wanted to anyway. So we'll have to see what they do. I don't expect that they will commit a blatant act of military aggression and an attack, because I think if they're anything, it's that they're not suicidal. I think survival is the name of the game. North Koreans have a lot of pride, and one needs to respect that. But I also think that we do need to try and walk this tightrope, and that's the challenge for our officials and for our societies, to try to work this out.
Let's now hear about some of those issues from the point of view of one of the Korean participants in OLS.
I'm Young-ho Kim, a professor at the Department of Political Science at Yonsei University, and I also assume the position of Associate Dean of College of Social Science.
Relations and dialogue between South and North Korea have fluctuated over the past number of decades, and Seoul by now has dealt with numerous escalations from Pyongyang. How has the inter-Korean atmosphere changed with the most recent Cheonan incident?
Cheonan incident took place at a time the current Ri-myung-bak government saw the way to improve inter-Korean relations. It took place just after inter-Korean negotiations of how to resume Kumgang Mountain tourism, project. So the timing was really bad. I don't know why North Korea calculated in the way, but it is true that the sinking of Cheonan suddenly cooled down all the remaining candles. So now we have no choice but to maintain the cool down relations for the time being. Even though there is some Security Council statement arguing that the Cheonan incident was very regrettable, giving a clear message to North Korea that don't do it again. But, for many South Koreans, it's not enough. Yeah, that's the current atmosphere.
My understanding is that the South Korean public's response to the Korean report on the Cheonan incident is actually quite divided.
Yes.
Could you please explain why you think that is?
The most fundamental reason is that young voters or young citizens, they don't believe in government. They don't trust government. They usually don't trust what government do. And they do not like the way the president handles important issues, because what they think is Lee Myung-bak's way is not democratic. It's just receiving an order from a CEO, because Lee Myung-bak was a former CEO of Hyundai Group. So some students complain that we are not the employee of Hyundai company. So government should first persuade people, and then on the basis of consensus, they pursue important project. But what they see is, the top to bottom order of do this or to do that. So on the basis of that, they basically agree that only with the notion that there is nobody but North Korea who sank the Cheonan arm. But they didn't like Lee Myung-bak's way of handling things. That is why. And also, in addition to that, there are ambivalence in South Korean public about North Korea. So whenever there is some kind of attack like Cheonan, and then South Korean public opinion got infuriated, oh, they are bad guys. And when we have news of starvation, then, oh, we're going to have something for them. So ambivalent and, kind of emotional ambivalence exists in South Korean public's mind. That is why, I guess.
The tides and changes of the South Korean public's opinion seem to vary from one extreme to another depending on the political situation and security situation.
Yeah, and their image on the political leaders.
Does that make it more difficult for leaders in Seoul to get things done?
Yeah, because it is a sort of joke that the only weak point of Sunshine Policy is that it is conducted by Kim Dae-jung. If it is conducted by some conservative leaders, then there might be that large criticisms on that. So it is not the content of policy, but the leader who initiate the policy, the ideological character of the leader. So it's very political.
North Korea has threatened a physical, even nuclear response to the recent joint U.S.-Korean military exercises in the East Sea that started this past weekend. Do you think they'll follow through with this threat? What kind of a threat is this?
What I found by observing the last 10 years of North Korea's provocation track is that their verbal provocation do not coincide with their actual behavior. Their verbal threatening level is very high, but observing what they really do is nothing. They just did some provocation against South Korea. So they verbally, they protest very violently. But that's the expression of their weakness. Yeah, they don't want to do that. So when they verbally provoke, then it is a sign that they will not provoke actually.
With this recent history of verbal provocations, was the sinking of the Chonan especially alarming? How was this different from the past? The fact that they acted so strongly without saying anything this time.
Actually, the size, the scale was too big, but such provocation could be expected because it's a series of engagement in the similar area, analog area. So in 1999, 2002, and we have 2009.
I'm going to jump in here just once more to elaborate on the incidents that Professor Kim just referenced. The maritime demarcation of the north-south border is not simply a horizontal extension of the 38th parallel that exists on land. The border, referred to as the Northern Limit Line, or NLL, actually sweeps upward through the West Sea, so that a number of small islands that share latitudes with the DPRK actually belong to South Korea. This was all unilaterally declared by the U.S. at the time of the Armistice Agreement in 1953. Although North Korea has never formally recognized the validity of this demarcation, it has generally honored its existence. Trouble begins when you factor in that the region right around those islands in the West Sea are excellent for crabbing and fishing. Beginning in 1999, North and South naval vessels have clashed along the NLL on three separate occasions, resulting in loss of life on both sides. The most recent incident occurred in November 2009, which resulted in injuries sustained by North Korean sailors, as well as damage to a North Korean patrol boat. Some analysts believe the sinking of the Chonan in March was in retaliation to the November clash.
And so it was quite probable that North Korea prepared some sort of retaliation. And they know that the face-to-face combat affair will be very detrimental to their considering the military equipment and military advancement. So they chose very abrupt ambush attack, but it is too big. The result was also unexpected on the side of North Korea.
What concerns you most about the future of South Korea's national security?
National security is... the problem is South Korea's national security itself is democratized. In the past, national security is the sort of a very professional job a security specialist should handle, and other people, just like in the movie of Men in Black, yeah, they don't have to know about security issues. But now, everybody can say something about security, and they can register their own opinion on that. But that's not all. Profitable for the good of security. And having consensus on such issues of security, how to retaliate North Korea, then we're going to have a war, then do you really risk a war? Are you ready for that? And everybody said no. So it's kind of emotion versus rationality. And the democratic procedure versus very professionalized security issues. So how to handle that complicated issue is the big problem in South Korea, yes.
For more information about this year's Opinion Leaders Seminar, as well as more about this episode and the podcast in general, please pay us a visit at keia.podbean.com. There, we've got links to the KEI website, as well as to the Flickr account, where we've got hundreds of photos up of past events and even a visit by some of the staff to North Korea last year. As always, please feel free to send any questions, comments, or suggested podcast topics to me at podcast@keia.org. I'd love to hear from you, so please don't be shy. Well, that's all for now. Thanks so much for listening. It was a pleasure to have you, and we look forward to seeing you next time on Korean Context. Bye.